You've landed inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
Well, hello, and welcome to Launch Street. Tamara here, and do I have an interesting interview for you today. Do you play an instrument? Have you ever been in a band? I have not. But it turns out that music can teach us a lot about a business, especially an orchestra. There's a conductor, a leader. You can hear the difference if your teammates on the trumpet aren't doing their job, and timing and collaboration matter. So here's the deal. I discovered all of this on today's interview with Roger Nirenberg. He's the conductor behind the unforgettable learning experience, the music paradigm, that many teams and organizations go through. The organization's people, who are participants, not just audience members, are seated with a live professional orchestra where they can observe highly trained musicians as they perform. The participants' attention is drawn to kind of fascinating and unexpected organizational dynamics with the orchestra. And I just have to tell you, as he walked me through the experience and I looked at some videos, it is phenomenal to see how we in business, once we kind of are embedded, I guess, in an orchestra, actually get it. We get team dynamics in a way that maybe we didn't see them before. It's so interesting. This interview is fascinating. So are you ready for a wild ride? Because here we go. Roger, welcome to Inside Launch Street.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
So what's your first memory of being innovative?
Well, it's hard to think of a single one, but I think I was about 10, and I had just discovered the Beethoven symphonies, and I was obsessed with them, and I just was beginning playing an instrument, and I knew how to write music, and I wanted to write something like that, and so I started writing music. And they were all imitations of the Beethoven Third Symphony, shameful imitations. But that began my career as a composer.
So you've always been into music, or musical, I guess.
Well, not as young as some people. You know, many people start when they're 3 or 4.
Yeah.
I didn't really start until I was about 8 or 9 or 10. Really, 10 was when I really fell in love with it.
Mm. What is it that you love about it so much?
Oh, that's a little hard to say. It's just, it's so profoundly beautiful. It's not just that it's pretty. It's beautiful in a kind of a very truthful way. It seems to reveal to you some of the inner secrets of what it is to be alive and how beautiful it is to be alive. And, in such a variety of ways, and it just makes everything else kind of disappear, and you join into this imaginary world of in which everything is so extraordinarily beautiful.
So I bet at this point, Launch Streeters are going, this is a business innovation podcast. Why are you talking about music? So let's fast forward and get us all on the same page. Describe what you do with the music paradigm, what it is, what it achieves.
Well, the music paradigm is a learning experience for organizations. Organizations engage me to appear at their important meeting, and I hire an orchestra from the locality, wherever it is. And we show up. Before the participants arrive in the room, we spend an hour rehearsing. And then the participants come in, they discover there's an orchestra in their meeting room. And not only that, but they're sitting inside the orchestra. They're in a position that they've never been before. And they're alongside the musicians, sprinkled all about. And it begins as a kind of a tour of the orchestra. But you see, in advance, my client has told me what the meeting is about and what its goals are and what they're trying to accomplish. What are the challenges that they're facing and what are the opportunities that they have and what's at stake? So I know all these things, and then I cogitate on it before the meeting, and I design role-playing exercises, which I spring on the musicians spontaneously. And so it begins as a kind of a fascinating tour about various things about orchestras that people don't know. But the more these role-playing exercises are being done, the orchestra begins to seem more and more like their own workplace. The same kind of issues that happen to them at work are happening in the orchestra. But because it's music, it's much easier to connect the dots in the musical reality than it is in the much slower unfolding real reality. So that the insights are much clearer and much stronger. And not only are they cognitive, but they're also, they can feel them. And they feel them with their emotions, but they also feel them with their bodies, because their bodies are resonating with the sound that's so close. So it turns into this amazingly powerful learning experience that makes people reflect on themselves at work, on their own power. It makes them realize powers that they had that they hadn't seen before. It makes them realize opportunities. It makes them see some of the things about their behavior that they didn't know and they read that are kind of embarrassing, but nobody is confronting them. They're discovering this all on their own.
So before we dig into, I want to get into some actual kind of real world stories of what's come out of it. But before we get specific, will you help us understand, you know, how does an orchestra and music help in leadership and business in a way that just having that discussion doesn't? I mean, I think you tapped on it a little bit with kind of they're sitting in the orchestra, they feel the music. Why does that work so well?
Well, it's very dramatic. So, for example, one of my clients was doing a huge transformation. It was a 5-year transformation. First of all, it was a huge organization, and they were fundamentally changing the nature of their business. And they decided that the only way that this was going to be successful, because so much was at stake, was if the leadership, the entire leadership of the organization, bought into it and exercised a kind of leadership which was beyond just making sure that mistakes weren't made. It had to be an active, engaged, communicative kind of leadership. That's what they wanted from their leaders. So one of the role plays that I did was I asked the orchestra, I identified a particular passage, and then I said in this performance now, the principal players, the leaders, you know, the, let's say 20% of the orchestra, was going to commit completely to the performance. But the rank and file, the remaining 80%, were going to do as little as possible without getting caught. Well, that's kind of humorous because nobody ever asked them to do that. But they did it. And what happened, what everybody heard, was that the orchestra sounded fine because the 20% was so good that they kind of carried it. And nobody really heard anything that was wrong. And then I pointed out to them that, in spite of the surprised looks on their faces, that this really shouldn't surprise them, because we all know that that's the way things work in the real world, that most organizations do not realize their potential, the potential that they actually have. And I said, you wouldn't even think this was a dysfunction until you heard the following. And then I said, what would it be like if every musician gave everything that you know to this performance? And then the orchestra plays the same passage, and wow, it's so different. And everybody not only hears it, but they feel it. And it's such a completely different energy. And then I point out what a challenging demonstration this is for any leader. Because if you're the leader, that's what you have to do. That's the role that you have to play. So what this does is it makes leaders see their role in a different way and see their opportunity and see what's acceptable and what is just doesn't cut it in the coming challenges that the organization is facing. So that's one example.
I've actually got two questions kind of in one. So I'll kind of say them at the same time and then kind of, you know, answer in the right order for you. One is, what are some, I think you kind of just mentioned it, right? The 20% of the people are doing extraordinary work and everybody else is getting by and you don't even notice it really. Like, it's getting by. And that what everybody realizing potential looks like. What are the other types of kind of big themes or patterns do you see coming out of these sessions together? And then my other kind of layer to that is, what has come out of one of your sessions that an insight maybe or a realization that actually surprised you, maybe you didn't expect?
Well, let's take those one at a time.
Yeah.
I think the world is changing fast. We all know that, and it's changing in so many ways. Just if we take like the technological innovations and the way that it's disrupting so many businesses and so many industries, that huge organizations can go out of business in just a couple of years in this rapidly changing environment. And so every organization, every single organization is scrambling to try to organize themselves so that they can survive in the coming time. Not only survive, but thrive. So, and what that requires of workers at every level, leadership and those who are taking the directions, requires them to be agile and flexible and to work fast and in effect to be competitive. So that's one of the themes that we touch on. Well, the orchestra is a fantastic vehicle for demonstrating that in real time, because in the directions at one point that I give, I ask the orchestra to change and do something one way and then another way and then another way in real time. And I ask them to do this without conductor. And they stand as if it's some kind of magic trick that's happening. It takes them a while to realize that this is actually a human capacity, that when humans are dedicated to responding collectively and to working together and prizing the collective result above whatever the individual interest would be, that they can accomplish incredible things. That's just one example.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I think it's to your point about the collective and yet everybody playing an important part, because if you're missing some of those parts, the collective doesn't work as well. Kind of a little bit to what you were saying earlier.
That's right. And I sometimes do that. I'll take one seemingly insignificant part and I'll ask them not to play. And then everybody else in the orchestra plays and it sounds fine. And then I add this one little element, like let's say it's the triangle. You know, this small instrument in the back of the orchestra, but when people are focused on it, they begin to realize that that one instrument adds so much value. And, of course, people are reflecting about themselves. They're reflecting about their own value, but they're also reflecting about the value of their colleagues whose role they had underestimated until then. So this becomes a space for a lot of introspection.
That has got to be a great lesson in recognizing the value that your team members bring. Because I often hear from people, well, you know, our team does this, but that team does over there doesn't. I don't quite understand what they do.
That's very, very common.
Yeah. So interesting.
And what happens as a result of that is that organizations lose competitive advantage, because so often the competitive advantage comes from collaboration across boundaries. And that's a big responsibility for the leader, because only the leader can really encourage and promote cross-boundary collaboration.
You know, before you go on, I love the way you said that for us Launch Streeters listening, of the collaboration across boundaries. I think it's easy to collaborate with the person right next to you, but it's harder to recognize the importance of that collaboration with people upstream and downstream. And I think that through music, you can help people see that it's the people kind of up and down and sideways of you, not just the people right in your little area.
That's right. And that musicians are incredibly good. They even have a kind of expression for it. It's putting their ears on long poles, and suddenly they're hearing across the stage to things that are far away. And that's a capacity that musicians have to cultivate and that conductors have to encourage musicians to do. But in a room, it becomes very real. And in my sessions, it's not only demonstrations, but there are dialogues in which I talk to the musicians about, you know, well, how did you do that? What's the capacity? But all the dialogue that I'm doing is targeted towards the challenges and the opportunities of the client organization. So although it seems like we're talking about music, the whole time we're really talking about the client organization, about their organization and what's going on in it.
And let's go to the second part of that question. What are any insights that have come out that you thought, oh, I didn't, that's an interesting one. I wouldn't have seen that one coming.
Well, yeah, here's one. I also do sessions sometimes with string quartets. And I had one very well-known organization as a client, but it was the very top of the company. It was the CEO plus the 10 presidents of the various different divisions. And so we had a breakout group, and there's some discussion, musicians included. And one of the people came back reporting the insights he had, and he said, when the musicians talk about what they're doing, they tend to be forward-looking. They tend to be aspirational. They tend to be about what they're going to aim for the next time. He said, in our organization, we're always backward-looking.
Right.
We're looking at the data that just happened. We're trying to analyze what happened, and we don't give much attention to the aspirations and the possibilities. So I thought that was really quite remarkable, the way that man understood this and articulated it. And of course, that's a really powerful idea and a powerful insight.
You know, I'm assuming, and correct me if I'm wrong, because, you know, I'm in corporate America too, that the people who are coming in to do this meeting and this orchestra, they're not musicians, right? Maybe some of them are every now and again, but generally speaking, it's people like me who maybe took something in high school.
Yes.
So what is there something to it of not just the orchestra part of it, which is obviously very powerful, but also this kind of trying something new? I mean, it's got to be so uncomfortable and awkward at first.
Well, that's an excellent, it's really very insightful question. You see, the changes that a lot of my client organizations need to bring about are not comfortable for their people, because people are much more comfortable doing the things that have always been successful. And they have a stake in not changing. And it's very difficult to get people to open up to that. So what happens and one of the greatest barriers is the previous success that they've had, that they're holding on to. So what happens in this environment is, whereas all that kind of prestige and that status that they have, well, they walk into a room where it doesn't matter. It's a new environment. It's an environment, and they don't know the rules. And so, in a way, they're in a position where they're all the things that are holding them back, they have to give them up. And that's done quite intentionally, because we know how difficult it is to get people to change. Everybody knows that. As a matter of fact, it's difficult for us. But if you're in an environment in which everything is new and different, but then if that environment proves to be fascinating and delightful as well, and humorous and tremendous fun, it's just the ideal learning playground for the kinds of changes that you're going to need to accept one way or another.
You know, I have to imagine that particularly in organizations that are dealing with maybe some hierarchy issues, that going into a situation like this, because if I heard you right, it's almost an even playing field, because all that stuff gets left behind, your accolades, your titles, what you're good at, your ability to tell somebody else what to do, because they're no longer in that role. So it must help in that scenario.
The big bonuses that you've made.
Yeah, all, right.
All the people that are telling you what you want to hear, they think you want to hear, because you have power over them. All that's gone. And you're just an ordinary person in a place where you don't really understand what the rules are.
How long does the experience take typically? I mean, I'm sure you customize, but what's your average time to kind of from this, they come into the room to their leaving with these profound insights?
it's an hour and a half with the orchestra, and then an additional half hour with just the client organization in a question and answer, which is important because the experience is so rich, and it's so rich for so many senses that it takes people a while to start making all the connections that can be helpful. And then people constantly talk about the fact that they keep on making connections hours after it's over.
I'm curious from an innovation perspective. When I'm talking about innovation, I'm not talking about just the new product or new technology, but the ideal to think, the ability to think differently about what's in front of you, your challenges, your opportunities, new process developments, new products, whatever it is, kind of applying that to your role in the organization, whatever that may be. How does this experience, the music paradigm, help with sparking some of that innovation that's inside people, but maybe they're not utilizing or not realizing, kind of to your point earlier about not realizing our potential?
Another really excellent, insightful question. In the music paradigm, people don't really learn anything new. The ideas are things that people know already. But what happens is that they connect the dots in a different way. So they might look at the same things that they've always been looking at every day, but they appear different because the relationships and the meaning and it's especially the connections are different. And then you discover that you have more power. And that's really innovation. That by power, I mean you have the ability to affect the quality of your work in ways that you hadn't realized but were always there. And I think that's really powerful.
It sounds to me like, you know, not to kind of, you know, blow smoke, but that people really leave with a bit of a personal transformation out of an experience like this. I mean, I can really see myself going into it and walking away kind of profoundly changed about my role and my ability to contribute and my ability to innovate.
Yeah, I think that's right. I don't think that's overstating it because people talk about how powerful it was. And the interesting thing is, you know, when you have a powerful transformative experience, most often it's something that you do alone. But this is something that a group does together. And yet everybody's particular experience is entirely personal to them. And it's all happening within the way you think about things. And there's nobody's confronting you about it. Nobody's asking you to explain what's going on. It's just an experience. But it's so bonding for the organization, for everybody to have been in the same room and have been having these feeling rich experiences at the same time.
Do you ever follow up with teams a year or even 6 months, I suppose, after they do it? I'm curious I'm talking in circles. You had said earlier that, you know, sometimes those insights take a while to percolate. They don't always get them right away because there's so much spinning in your head after an experience like this. And then I think it takes time for people to then take action on those kind of insights and transformations that they have. So when you can, you know, follow up with them in 6 months or a year, kind of what are you hearing from them down the road? Because, you know, you and I both know going in with clients, it's one thing to have an amazing experience, another one for people to actually then sustain that learning.
I have not made it my business to collect data. And when I ask my clients about it, they say the kinds of changes, important as they are things that are hard to measure. But anecdotally, I hear a lot. For example, I remember one client said to me, he said, when I carefully planned this 3-day conference and, you know, spent so many million dollars on it, he said, I knew that your portion of it was going to be successful. What I didn't know was that 6 months later, it would be the only thing that my people remembered.
I mean, I'm not surprised. That's such a different experience. And I've got to imagine shocking to the system.
It is shocking in an entirely delightful way. And that's no accident. That's something that I worked into the design. Because if it becomes threatening, if it becomes unpleasant, if it becomes painful, then the whole experience won't work. It has to be delightful. It has to be playful. It has to be fun. And I make it that way. And part of the reason, because the musicians don't know what's going to happen, it's fun for them. You can imagine how much fun it is for them to role play at, you know, doing as little as possible without getting caught, you know, because they're play acting.
Right, right. It's fun for everybody.
It's fun for everybody. And at the same time, it's very challenging because they're wondering, is this going on in my workforce? Is this what I'm losing in my own people? You know, that kind of thing. So it's that combination of something which is very challenging, but also very delightful that makes the learning possible.
Yeah, you know, your comment earlier in that experience, an example that you shared about the, you know, 20% give it your all and the other 80% let's just, you know, do what you have to get by. I think as someone who's led teams and organizations, that's probably one of my biggest fears in my team is there's people who are semi-engaged, but I can't tell because things are moving good enough.
Right, yeah. And that's one of the things about music is you're in a world where you can tell, because musicians turn behavior into results instantaneously. And so it's this fantastic laboratory where you can try on one behavior and see what it does, and then you can try on another and another, and then you begin to connect. That's how what enables you to connect the dots, because in real life, the connection becomes much more tenuous.
Right. And I think, you know, the reality is in real life, you can rationalize just about anything, even the data. And with music, there's a very clear difference in, you know, version one versus version two.
That's right. And I make sure that the difference is not so subtle that the participants can't hear it. I choose my exercises carefully because I know that I'm dealing with an audience which is not a trained audience and not a music-loving audience. You don't have to love music in order to derive a lot from it, because I designed it in such a way that you'll be able to navigate through it.
Yeah, you had mentioned earlier that you know, you've had some clients who have gone through some major transformation. They were changing how they were trying to do things. What are other reasons clients pick up the phone and call you? I'm curious about the pain or challenge that something like this is ideal for solving.
Well, you know, I've had hundreds of clients and I've been doing this for 20 years, so I have many. And every organization, they get together from time to time. They bring their people together to review what happened in the last year and to talk about what's going to happen and make sure that they're aligned and that they're working as one organization. They understand what it is that we're all trying to do. And I think it's for those meetings that I get engaged mostly.
The ones that are the kind of strategic planning, for lack of a better way to say it.
Yes, but you know, sometimes it'll be a sales force that I'm meeting. Another time it'll be an organization that's just undergoing a merger and they want to make sure that it goes smoothly because they understand the stakes if it doesn't work. There are many different organizations. I remember once there was an aerospace a company that was competing for a contract for the next generation of the shuttle. And it was about a team and it was about how they were going to work together.
You know, you had said something in the beginning that I thought was actually really profound. And it was this, and you said it, kind of hinted to it a few times after. And it was this idea that with music and with this experience with the orchestra, you can actually immediately physically feel, see, hear, experience the result of the things that you're talking about. Where oftentimes in the business world in particular, the things we're talking about feel very fuzzy, very subjective, very hypothetical. And with music, you bring it to life immediately. Are there ways to apply that principle in our everyday life?
Well, if you're asking, is there a way that we can more immediately see the results of what we do, the impact of what we do?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I just, you know, your point about the 80-20, and I know that takes an orchestra to do that. But I'm thinking of, you know, back to some of the meetings I've had where I've thought, wow, if I could make this real for people, they'd really get it. But instead, I'm spinning my wheels because it's all this kind of hypothetical conversation where you can't really see the result the way you can with music. Are there ways that you can kind of apply what you're talking about here on a, if not smaller, more immediate scale, you know, before I get to something like the music paradigm?
Yeah. You ask really good questions.
Oh, thanks. Go on. I'm kidding.
I think there is, but it for me, it involves some musical sensibilities. For example, it involves becoming sensitive to the kind of energy that's going on between people, maybe manifest in their nonverbal behavior, in their body language, the kind of energy field that they create that you can sense in a room that people are just not really listening.
Right.
Of course, in the title of my book, the subtitle of my book is A Surprising Story About Leading by Listening. And so much in music is done by developing very high-powered listening. But if you bring listening of that caliber into you know, meetings and encounters with people, and you're an exceptionally good listener yourself, full of empathy and imagination and the ability to really stay focused on what somebody's saying and not focused on your rebuttal or your reply or something that's going to make you look good, let's say, that gives you an opportunity to kind of do what you were talking about, which is to make the result more evident, because those things are kind of subtle, those signs that I'm talking about, and you have to be attuned to them, and then you have to also trust that really matters.
You know, for launch readers, for us listening, I think what Roger here is talking about reading the energy in a room, is so important. I think we get so wrapped up in trying to look smart, present the idea, you know, make the room laugh, but we're not really paying attention to the actual energy and connections that are happening in the room. And that, I think, kind of to what you're saying, in music has to happen for it to work, particularly with an orchestra. And we're not doing that nearly enough in a meeting.
Well, we're trained in business, you know, we're trained on our output, you know, we're trained what we're going to say, you know, and we're not really trained very much on how to listen. Now, there was a young musician who came to me for a coaching in public speaking, because musicians are not schooled in public speaking.
It's not their strength.
Yeah. And one of the things that I said to her is that when you speak, you should be focusing on the group and the way that your words are landing with them, and make eye contact around the group and take in what they're seeing and what they're feeling and how they're reacting, that's an important tool in being able to connect with them. But it's kind of counterintuitive, because you're supposed to be giving a speech. But, you know, conductors, when they get really good, when you watch them, it's their ability to take in the orchestra and hear what the orchestra is doing and work with that, that enables them to make that orchestra feel like it's one thing. And isn't that what we want of a workforce? We want the workforce to feel like it's one entity, one nervous system, so that everybody has the same idea. And with all of their specialties and the specialization, each is contributing to it in a different way, but they have the same vision, the same values, the same priorities. And that comes about by a leader who can communicate very well. And a big part of communicating is the way you listen.
You know, I never really thought about that. I mean, I've obviously been to I've been to the orchestra several times. And I always saw that conductor as just, you know, keeping the pace, the one leading the group, the orchestra. It never really occurred to me that they were really working with the energy of the orchestra and dialing up and dialing down where they need to. I never even realized the back and forth, which is really a profound leadership lesson in itself.
That's right. And another thing is that that happens in music, and it also happens in life, is that the leader is in a different time zone than the workforce.
Mm, yeah.
Because in order for your directions to be effective and to really influence the group, they have to come at a different time than when the directions are executed.
Oh.
And that coordinating of your living in the future at the same time that your people are living in the present, and by being in their immediate future, you're enabling them, helping them to steer through all kinds of straits without having any accidents. It only happens if you're in a different time zone.
What do you think stops individuals from innovating? When you look out into the teams that you've worked with, what are they struggling with that keeps them from kind of doing some of these things that we were just talking about?
Well, that's a big question. I'll give you an answer, but I think there could be many answers. I think people spend a tremendous amount of energy protecting themselves. They protect their reputation. They protect their status. They protect their self-image. They get focused on that. They lose the kind of awareness of the moment. And then they want to cling, hold on to the things that make them feel safe and make them feel secure. And when you go into the realm of possibility, you're going to experience a kind of a weightlessness compared with the realm in the past where you have gravity and you know what your weight is. So I think as a leader, you try to challenge your people while at the same time making them feel safe. I think that's really critical.
What a tough balance to achieve.
It is tough, but after all, you know, playing the violin is very tough too. And leadership ought to be an art that is equally difficult to learn, equally elaborate, and there's just no end to the wrinkles and the challenges of leadership and the way it changes. It's a fascinating discipline.
You know, I recently I was collecting some data, and I read a study that said something to the effect of 75% of people in leadership roles were never given leadership training. And I always equate it to, you know, you take a great football player, that doesn't mean he's going to be a great coach. And I don't know if this applies in music too, about, you know, you don't take someone who's great at the trumpet, the violin, whatever, and turn him into a conductor, because that role is very different in itself and requires its own set of training.
Yeah. But of course, the way people get promoted in business is by being successful at their job. And if they're really successful at it, then they take them off of that job and they make them leaders of other people who are doing it. But the same skills that made them successful at their job are not necessarily going to make them successful as leaders. And I've done demonstrations of that because that happens a lot. And so I show, there was one scientific organization where everybody had been a scientist. And of course, the most successful ones were now leading scientists, but they were using the same kinds of disciplines that were very successful in doing science. And one of which was being very careful and scrupulous about accuracy. And what they were doing in leadership was with delaying decisions and until they had the same degree of accuracy. And what happened was the workforce was becoming completely disabled.
Right. Well, everything's bottlenecked.
Exactly. Right. So that's a perfect example of how when you move from worker to leader, everything changes. And it's why people would benefit from the right kind of leadership training. And in a way, that's kind of the business that I'm in now. Because so much of what I do is about leadership. It's a lot. I do a lot about collaboration, but I would say even more about leadership.
Before I ask you the last question, where can people go to learn more and connect with you?
Well, I wrote a book that I alluded to. It's called Maestro, A Surprising Story About Leading by Listening. There's also a website that I devote a lot of attention to, which has videos and blogs and many, many interesting things. And that's simply musicparadigm.com. And it's also a way of contacting me if you're interested, because there's a contact heading.
So I want to ask you, as kind of as the last question, I'd love to pull the answer from the book, Maestro, and we'll put links in the show notes to the book, your website, everything else. What's one piece of advice for us Launch Readers out there? One piece of advice or one thing we should do kind of based on your book?
If I had to give one piece of advice, I would say stay in the place of possibility, even though it may not manifest itself. It may not present itself. But, you know, tomorrow is not identical to today. And there's more opportunity in tomorrow. But if you have to have the right mindset for it, if you turn tomorrow into a carbon copy of today, then you're creating a kind of prison for yourself. And you're going to end up locked there. But if you can find and be open and awake to that there could be things that are out there and that you have the power to actually affect, I think that's the important place to be. And it's an important place to get knocked off of. But when you get knocked off of it, as you inevitably will be, you have to find your way back there, because that's really the only way to live.
Well, that was highly profound. I'm glad you chose that piece of advice, so thank you. Roger, it has been an absolute pleasure. I hope, Launch Readers, that you go to the website, check out the book, and also check out the experience. I mean, I think this is what Roger here does is not, I'd say, something that we always come across, even in our work in innovation, which is why we wanted to have him on. But more importantly, I couldn't agree more with what you're saying about that music, the ability of it, music in itself to transform people. I think we all know and have songs that touch us and move us and remind us of things, but our ability to participate in that and have profound experiences. So for Launch Readers out there, go check out the website, get engaged and see what this is about, because I think it's pretty amazing. So thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
I know, right? Fascinating. So the insight that stood out for me the most is how easy it is to get by with people on your team just doing 50 to 80% that you almost don't even notice it. It's like it seems like things are running smoothly, and it's not until you achieve true high performance as a team with everybody giving and doing 100% that you even see what's possible. You even see the difference. Totally kind of blew my mind. I didn't even realize how easy it is to get stuck in good enough and status quo, because things run, right? They're fine, but they're really not when you see the difference. All right, go make some music happen. Tamara, out.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, LaunchStreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.